Hello and welcome to the DC Insider Employer Update Podcast. This podcast updates you with the expertise and current insight of the Washington, D.C.-based attorneys from the Fortney Scott Law Firm. Each episode highlights the most important issues and analysis that employers need to know in order to understand and react to key federal developments affecting their business. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice on any subject matter. Now let's turn it over to our host, David Fortney.
Hey, everybody. This is David Fortney again, DC Insider Podcast. Great to have you aboard again. And we've got both Bert and Nita. Bert, how are you doing?
Just great. And I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. Hope you are, too.
Me too. I've got six people coming for dinner and not a whole lot, but considering COVID, I'll take it. How about you, Nita?
Well, I'm looking forward to having my son assist me with cooking. He's going to be the main chef and I'm going to be the sous chef.
Very nice.
We're all feeling like President Biden now. We can't get COVID out of our life, but for Thanksgiving, we're happily unmasked and together.
Exactly. And vaccinated, which is kind of the issue of the day. I keep thinking in these podcasts, we're going to move on beyond COVID. I do kind of empathize certainly with President Biden because I'm sure he'd like to move on too. But as all of us know, COVID does continue to sort of swamp the agenda and dominate. And certainly in dealing with our clients, that's what we keep hearing, that it's pretty much COVID, COVID, COVID taking over everything. So I think, guys, we should really focus on doing an update on where things stand with COVID, what we've been seeing, because we've all been very busy on that topic. Let me just kick off by noting so that everyone coming to the podcast, that's just a couple of foundational elements. There are multiple federal mandates or requirements at play involving COVID response and specifically vaccinations and or testing. And I want to just kind of review the bidding, if you will, so that we know what we've got. First, we've talked a lot about this already, federal contractor mandates, and that is basically vaccination only, testing only for accommodation purposes. We also have the new requirements the president entered by executive order for recipients of Medicare and Medicaid. Those are coming online. The OSHA emergency temporary standard that has been all over the news, and that's either a vaccine or testing in lieu of vaccination mandate. And then finally, a lot of people have lost track. We already have one emergency standard in place, and that was for the healthcare sector. And of course, that issued back in June, but that is scheduled to end the third week of December, December 21st, and which means that we may be seeing a new final regulation from OSHA involving COVID requirements for the healthcare sector. So a lot of that going on, I think. But there have been some more recent updates, haven't there, Bert, on some of these mandates?
Yeah, there have. One thing I want to make sure people understand, because they get lost, especially this last week with all the news on the OSHA ETS, is that the federal contractor vaccine mandate is still in place and will remain in place until further notice, that by which I mean some kind of judicial intervention. But on November 16th, the Safer Federal Workforce guidance was published in the Federal Register. And David, I think we'll talk about the APA implications of that. And the important thing for contractors to know about that is that it moved the deadline for compliance from January 4th to January 18th. And there's now going to be a comment period of 60 days between now and January 18th. But the important thing to remember for contractors is, no matter what you've heard about the stays of this and stays of that, the federal contractor mandate is still in place, and you should be taking steps to prepare yourself to comply now, because there's a lot that employers have to do.
Let me just pick up on that thread. This is it sounds like kind of a technical point, but it's, I think, an important one for us to recognize. And that is, it is the position of the administration that because of the president's executive order that imposed the federal contractor vaccination obligation mandate and the guidance issued by the task force, which we've already unpacked in some earlier podcasts, that those requirements were not subject to normal rulemaking under the Administrative Procedure Act. So you don't have to go out for notice and comment. Well, the litigation, and we're going to unpack the litigation a little more because there have been developments there, but one of the challenge points that's being raised in the litigation to the federal contractor vaccinations is you should have done rulemaking. So what the administration did was they basically said, you know what, we don't think we have to, but they put this notice up saying, but we'll collect comments anyhow. We're not going to concede it was necessary, but that way they've sort of covered themselves.
One last thing I wanted to point out, and something we were just talking to a client about yesterday, is that federal contractors are not obligated to comply with the federal contractor rule, which ties into some of the state issues we'll talk about in a minute. They're not obligated to comply until they get it in their contract. However, on now, January 18th, all of their employees covered by the federal contractor mandate need to be in compliance by being fully vaccinated.
So even if they don't have the clauses in at this point, a lot of them are looking to start anticipating that those clauses will be in, knowing that unless they start getting people vaccinated, they won't be fully vaccinated by the new deadline of January 18th.
And just let me reemphasize, there's been so much emphasis in the press, particularly about employee rights and personal responsibility. But if you look at these mandates, I think the burden falls squarely on the employers. And there is a great deal to do to comply with these mandates. And just put the court stuff aside and focus on how you can get your ducks in a row, because there will be a point when compliance is required of some kind, and you should use this time to get ready to comply.
Well, Nita, most of the action's really been with the new OSHA emergency temporary standard. That seems to be the focus of what's going on there. Give us sort of the rundown on that, can you?
I absolutely can. And so on November the 5th, let's get our dates here. November the 5th, the ETS was published in the Federal Register, and because it's an emergency temporary standard, it went into effect immediately. On November the 6th, the Fifth Circuit, because there was a rush to the courthouse on this ETS, the Fifth Circuit gave a temporary block on the enforcement of the ETS. The federal government came in and the plaintiffs came in and filed additional briefs on this. But the following Friday, on the 12th of November, the Fifth Circuit extended its stay on the ETS and told OSHA they could not implement or enforce the ETS at all. And Bert, I know you've read their opinion. I think it's important for employers to understand what the arguments are that are going to be in this litigation.
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure that the ruling of the Fifth Circuit is going to define the arguments, because this was one of the most strident and vehement political statements that I've ever read coming from a court. You know, we usually use the word opinion for the Supreme Court because they're giving their opinion on what the law means. And we usually use the word rulings or decisions for appellate courts. This was an opinion because this was filled with politically motivated, highly politicized language, very strident. For example, for many of us, they even misconstrued what the ETS requires by de-emphasizing and ignoring the fact that, you know, the ETS does provide both for vaccinations and for testing. So it's not one shot fits all. And the court was, well, just give you an example. It was just filled with quotable phrases, these staggeringly overbroad, grossly exceeds OSHA's statutory authority. It's a choice between jobs and jabs. This was a judicial opinion made to be read on television. It's just full of sound bites. And oddly enough, in this entire document, there was not a single reference to the number of absences and deaths in the workplace that was caused by COVID. It was no comparison between the cost of implementation versus the cost of those absences. And one final thing, though, there was some very important legal argument and was directed exactly to Justice Gorsuch, who has written about what's called the notion of non-delegation, which is that there are certain responsibilities that Congress cannot delegate to an agency. And the court pointedly referenced that because Justice Gorsuch has written about it as a law student as a practicing lawyer and a judge and as a justice. So we have this very strident, vehement opinion, strongly denouncing OSHA, strongly denouncing the ETS. But please remember, because we'll talk about now of where this goes from here, this decision has no binding effect now that we'll talk about how this happens. Right. Now that there is a new procedure to deal with all the cases challenging the ETS.
We do have the impact of, and when OSHA agreed that it recognized this Fifth Circuit ruling, is that OSHA now is stayed, using the court's nomenclature, stayed, that is prohibited, from issuing further guidance, further opinions. So recall when the ETS rolled out, they issued model policies. They issued about 100 FAQs. They issued a whole bunch of fact sheets and other information. So OSHA is not only enjoined from enforcement, by the way, there are no deadlines till the first week of December, but they're also stayed from doing anything to implement. So no further guidance is to occur until that stay is modified. But the Fifth Circuit turns out to be what, Bert? Just one stop. We're not done.
That's right. You might say it's the first stop on a multi-stop airplane journey. There were challenges to the ETS in all but one of the federal appellate circuits that were like 12 courts of appeal had suits from attorneys general, from businesses, frankly, from advocates on both sides of the issue. And there happens to be a procedure. The courts have foreseen the possibility for this kind of multi-jurisdictional litigation. And there is a procedure by which literally it looks like the Powerball you've probably seen on television. Each court that has a case has its name thrown in a hopper. And there is a panel selected by the Chief Justice, and they gather together, and the clerk of one of their courts literally draws a name from the hat. And on the 16th of November, the Sixth Circuit, which is the circuit for Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee, won or lost that lottery and will now be the court that makes the decision. And remember, the Fifth Circuit opinion is still in place because it hasn't been lifted, but it has no continuing effect if and when the Sixth Circuit decides to act. And David, why don't you take us through the next steps of the litigation?
Yeah, so next steps are the Sixth Circuit, OSHA will file its rulemaking record. The Sixth Circuit will enter an order scheduling arguments, briefing, and arguments to be presented. All of that will be on a very accelerated basis because the government's going to be saying, look, please lift the stay that the Fifth Circuit had in place. And the Sixth Circuit has the full power to do anything it wants. It doesn't have to follow the Fifth Circuit. It can rescind, it can modify, or it can issue its own stay that's different in terms. But the Sixth Circuit will work its way through on an expedited process. I don't know if they'll get it done by Thanksgiving, but it'll be at or about the time, if not Thanksgiving, by the beginning of the week. And then after that, the final stop will be the Supreme Court. Now, the court will have discretion. It will be on a petition for review, and the court will decide, it will have the option whether to review or not. And so one way or the other, either because they will review it and issue an opinion or because they will decline to review it, the Supreme Court will at least have the last chance to have the last word.
I think we're going to get a sense of where this is going with the Sixth Circuit's order as to how many briefs they're going to permit. I mean, there are literally dozens of litigants. And if each one fully briefs this, the poor clerks won't even get to read this till next year. So how they're going to adjudicate this matter is going to be one of the interesting indications of where we're going to wind up.
Right. So we have all this litigation swirling around. This is focused only on the OSHA ETS. But meanwhile, the federal contractor mandate and some of the other federal mandates that have been talked about before, there are separate litigations proceeding on those. And there have been a number of lawsuits. These tend to be brought by litigants who track to sort of geopolitical parties. The Republican state attorneys general have filed one lawsuit challenging the federal contractor vaccine mandates, calling that a radical intrusion on the personal autonomy of American workers. That's something that I think, Anita, you've looked at that, but I think that's one that's not likely to succeed, notwithstanding it has some pretty quotable sound bites in it.
It does have quotable sound bites. it's interesting, that particular litigation, which is here in my city of St. Louis, was filed by the 10 attorney generals, as you mentioned, led, many of which are running, by the way, for higher office, just so you know. They have asked the federal district judge here in St. Louis to rule before Thanksgiving so that employees who don't want to get vaccinated know what jobs they can go to. Obviously, the government has said that it's not going to happen. So, but that is probably the most prominent of the multitudinous litigation. And David, I think in Bert, the interesting thing is, at least at this point, unlike the multi-district litigation for ETS, the federal contractor vaccine mandates, and there are a number of other litigation out there against the federal employee vaccination and also the military, those are all still in district courts all over the country.
Right. And initially, at least here in DC, the federal court rejected the challenges to both the federal employee and the military vaccine mandates, as expected, I might add.
Yeah, but you know, I think we may be surprised. The traditional belief is, especially for federal contractors, that it's your choice to become a contractor. You don't have to do business with the federal government. And as a result, you kind of just have to just lie there and take it. Whatever rules the government imposes, that's just part of the cost of doing business. I think because of the emphasis in all of these suits on personal responsibility and on individual rights, religious rights, medical rights, we may see that shield, as it were, that the government enjoyed when dealing with federal contractors. We may start seeing some cracks in that shield. It's something that federal contractors should notice with great care.
Meanwhile, the federal contractors, all employers covered by the ETS, are now being pummeled in various states with state laws demanding different kinds of protections, not allowing employers to require vaccines, adding different types of exclusions over and above the federal contractor exclusions of medical and religious, saying that you can't fire people if they file an exemption, allowing them to get unemployment if they're fired for these vaccinations. And I swear every day, Florida yesterday just passed another one. So right now, just to give you a count, we started with just Montana, which is a little different because they banned vaccine mandates under their employment discrimination law. But you've got Alabama, Arkansas, Texas, Florida, Utah, Tennessee, all have varying versions of restrictions on employers' ability to implement what is required under the ETS and the federal vaccine mandate. And so, David and Bert, I'm not sure what employers should be doing at this point.
As I said earlier, Nita, I think that employers should use this hiatus, this judicial hiatus, to get their ducks in a row. Some of these cases may prevail, some may not. But in any event, I think a prudent employer should understand that government regulation on this issue is forthcoming. After an ETS, there may be just a standard OSHA regulation, which doesn't have to meet the very high criteria that an emergency temporary standard has to meet. So I think regardless of where you are, you ought to start looking at the ETS as a kind of template for what kind of regulation might be forthcoming that you might consider starting to get your ducks in a row for.
However, in the meantime, some of these state laws are on the books, and it's not clear, they have not yet been adjudicated as being preempted. So what we're seeing many clients do is, at least initially, for example, Texas entered an executive order that appears to be broader in scope in granting exemptions that wouldn't be recognized under the OSHA ETS or the federal contractor. So since those pending federal requirements have not yet gone into effect, we're seeing many of our Texas clients at least temporarily, conditionally recognize the state law requirements, implement them, noting that if and when the federal requirements become effective, that they may supersede or preempt and result in setting aside the state law requirements. It's a really tricky time for employers, Bert, I think, because the long run, I think the federal standards will be sorted and ultimately followed. But in the interim, these differing and sometimes conflicting state laws, particularly in this initial transition period where the preemption arguments aren't as strong, place employers in a real conundrum.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And let's not overlook another huge sector of the population. That is all of the companies and all of the institutions that take Medicare and Medicaid money. They also have an executive order. There are something like 15 suits challenging that as well. There must have been some agreement in advance because St. Louis was again chosen to be the situs for one of the big litigations. There's another 6 or 8 cases being consolidated in Louisiana. Texas is going off on its own, not surprisingly. But we're going to get a lot of rulings with respect to the CMS EO as well, all challenging this notion of federal supremacy. You know, for those history buffs, I mean, back in the 1830s and 1840s, this was called nullification. And we're kind of back there right now in the early part of the 21st century. So both for history buffs, as well as for lawyers, as well as for employers, this is a really critical time for looking at the courts.
Well, and the numbers are huge. We're really talking about so much of the American workforce. Those CMS requirements, Bert, that you mentioned, 17 million workers are covered by those. The federal contractor workers are millions more. The OSHA ETS, 84 million. That's 100 million under those two standards alone. Not to mention the federal workforce, the federal government being the largest employer in the country, and others. So in the next, I would say, 90 days, as these issues are sorted out, we're really going to see whether the American worker is or is not under varying vaccination mandates. Well, that's the lay of the land for the moment. The only thing we know for sure is that it won't be the same way in a couple of more days. It continues to change quickly. What do employers do? Because they don't have the luxury of just hanging out on a podcast and talking about it. They're held accountable. And they have to, in fact, make decisions, deploy resources, communicate with those workers out there, not to mention they're competing for talent. They're afraid that workers will quit if they impose the obligations, if they don't have to. And they're also really worried sick about the costs, because the costs of doing this are quite great. So what do we think about at this point? I'd throw out one idea. A lot of our clients are both contractors and OSHA. They have those two obligations at a minimum they're looking at. So many are looking at sort of developing the threshold issue. One lane, am I going to put a vaccine mandate on everyone because the OSHA ETS would require that? Or am I going to use sort of a scalpel and define only those that are working on or in connection with a federal contract, impose the mandate there, and allow testing on the other parts of my workforce? But that's a threshold question that the employer gets to make still at this point.
That kind of picks up on my continuing theme, and I apologize if I repeat myself, but we've got to remember the OSHA ETS has been suspended, but it has not been ruled invalid. So as I say, prudent employers should look at the kinds of run-up obligations, rosters, knowing who's vaccinated. How would I work the time off protocols? How would I do the testing protocols? All of those things are there as a kind of template that at least you can make decisions about during the pendency of this litigation. And I would counsel all of our listeners to do that.
And finally, I think that they need to monitor what's going on with all of these challenges. We know that certainly the ETS is going to end up in the Supreme Court. And I'm assuming the federal contractor mandate and the CMS challenges will eventually as well. Although perhaps with the ETS decision, the Supreme Court may resolve some of these other issues. And employers are just going to have to deal with the states on a state-by-state basis. I think we've said before, like with Texas, you're going to give them a temporary exemption for something that doesn't, you know, if it's under state law for now, but the federal contractor mandate doesn't allow it. Just do it in the interim until we have a better idea what's going on. And unfortunately, we're still talking about COVID, and it's on the rise again as well, right, David?
We sure are. Well, I'm hoping in the future, very soon, there's been a lot of other things going on in D.C. The infrastructure bill, bipartisan basis, was passed and signed into law. That's very exciting. The remaining initiative, the Build Back Better initiative that the president is pursuing, I think in a week or two, we're going to know whether that will be passed and what it looks like. as well as we're seeing the agencies wake up. So while the COVID issues are being sorted and all these litigations and regulations and mandates are being sorted through, there are other key developments that we're going to be jumping into soon. So I would say at this point, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I'm very thankful that we have a vaccine. That is the whole basis under which all these disputes are occurring, how you implement them. And I think that we have that to look forward to, all of those developments. Anything else, Nita or Bert?
Well, first, I want to thank everyone for joining us. And secondly, I want to wish everyone a happy and healthy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Much to be thankful for in the midst of this turmoil.
Hear, hear. Thanks, everyone. And don't forget to subscribe either on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. We really appreciate you listening. Thanks very much and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, everyone. We look forward to the next update. For those that would like to connect with any of the lawyers from Fortney Scott, please reach out to them directly by visiting fortneyscott.com. On the website, you can also listen to previous podcast episodes, as well as pick up your copy of the DC Insider Report and sign up for future updates. Thanks so much for listening.